Welcome, my friends.
Here we are
on this beautiful day in Kingston, Jamaica. And it's a day of very special things. What are we talking about today? We're talking about stem cells, healing, and longevity. Stem cells, healing, and longevity. Now, it's true. It's true. But in 1972, I was in Russia having a very beautiful experience in Czechoslovakia and Russia and so forth. And I was with the first International Congress of Parapsychology and Psychotronics in Prague, Czechoslovakia first. And there were 300 of us from all over the world invited to participate. We were the scientific dreamers of that day. That was 1972. And we had the privilege of going to Russia and getting an inside activity at that time. You know, at that time, it was not too cool to be in Russia. And we went into Russia, the scientists and I. There were 75 of us of the large group that were selected to go. And I went there with the spiritual mind treatment that religious science espouses so heartily and beautifully, and works. And I taught them the science of mind program. But the thing is, it was more than that. I put it in terms that they understood the law of cause and effect. And they understood the term law of cause and effect, and they understood how it functioned and how it was meaningful to them. But there were about 10 of us who were really way out. And you'll find out by the time the meeting is over today, I'm one of these way out people. Your television man who interviewed me, I was very courteous, I was very peaceful, I listened to him, I wanted to hear what he wanted me to say, because I can wrap my subject around any topic, you know. You name the topic, and I'll talk about what I want to talk about. You know what I mean? I'll talk what I want to talk about, because that's all I know to talk about. And I want to see you, John. I mean, if you're covered up by this beautiful board here, I can't see you, and I miss half the show. Okay, now. You're welcome. I mean, we don't have such good-looking men all over the world in the United States like you guys do here. I mean, you know, Jamaicans, there's some special formula on being beautiful and handsome and wonderful figures. And I tell you, I should come down here and spend a little more time here. It's a great place. Okay. In Prague, Czechoslovakia, there were 10 of us that were privileged to go to Charles University. That's the university in Prague, Czechoslovakia. And we went into the main library in Charles University. And in the main library, it was, you know, sliding ladders, you know, that would move people up and down to climb up and get books on the upper shelves and stuff like that. It's really quite a beautiful thing, all in beautiful wood, just wonderfully made. It was ancient then, and you can imagine, it was quite a beautiful old building. The library was part of the total complex. You made it. And it is wonderful. So, we were all gazing around, amazed at the beautiful books and at the beautiful things there. And we were thinking to ourselves, okay, now, why are we called in here? I mean, you know, they knew. And so they called us. And then they said, all right, we want you to have an experience. And we said, that's what we're here for. That's what we're here for. And so they pulled the carpet away from the center of the room, and there was a cellar. There was a cellar door, and they opened it up. And we went down into this cellar door, And it wasn't dank and musty, but it was a cellar door leading to the lower area underground. And apparently that was one of the few entrances to it. And as we went down there, we saw people industriously working on their projects. And we asked our hosts, what is this all about? And then they closed the door, and the carpet mysteriously appeared over the area, and other people who wanted to move that carpet couldn't move it because it just seemed like it was glued to the floor for anybody except the special few who knew the secret. And so we walked down these stairs, and as we walked down these stairs, we saw all these people with lighted rooms, beautifully lighted rooms. If you've ever read The Life and Teachings of the Masters of the Far East by Baird Spaulding, it tells about temple not made by hands and how each of the rooms were lighted instantly as people would enter into them. Well, this place was like that. And we each were chosen to go in to talk to different people. We didn't all go to one person. And the person that I had the privilege of going and seeing was an alchemist. And an alchemist is a person who can change base metals to gold. That's the theory that we have about it. But an alchemist is one who uses the law of cause and effect in a very supreme, powerful way. And they don't tell everybody. They don't tell everybody because most people will say, okay, you do it. People came to Jesus and said, Jesus, heal me. And he says, you got to do it for yourself. If I do it and I'm not around, next time you have a problem, you won't know how to do it. Do it for yourself. Learn how to do it for yourself. And so these alchemists were sharing with us their little techniques. Well, they were telling us all about the story of life, telling me all about the story of life and death, and immortality, and gloams. If you don't know what a gloam is, you might look it up in the dictionary. It's quite a fascinating little creature. Creation of the mind, which all things are. And as he did this, he was showing me how he could do many things which a magician would love to do. And I said, how can you do that? I said, these are things that only stage magicians pretend to do, legerdemain and things like that. And they said, with our mind, with our thought. We think our thought, and our thought is exercised in reality. It's exercised as an experience that we can feel, touch, taste, and know very definitely. Well, now, that was quite something. So I listened and I listened and I listened. And I listened and I listened and I listened. I've been 25 all my life, and I listened with the youthful attitude of a 25-year-old, hearing everything that he had to say. And then he said, now there are 10 of you who have come down here, and only 2 or 3 are going to go away with the message that we share with you. Just 2 or 3. Are going to go away with the ability to apply it. The ability to apply it is very, very difficult. If any of you have seen the movie The Secret, it's quite a charming movie, quite interesting, and they try to make it sound like it's some great secret that's hidden from society and it's hidden from the world and it's hidden from everything. And it is, but it's hidden right here in each of us. It's hidden right here because we do not apply it. As a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. Now you look at some people and they have very tragic lives. And you say, but they're such good people. They give to charity. They have such a nice wife and children. They're such good people. Why do they have these tragic things taking place in their life? As a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. Now, it's not a matter that you are thinking bad things or dirty things. It's just a matter that you are thinking bad things and dirty things. Do you know that throughout the world, war is prevalent? Throughout the world, 6 billion people are experiencing war right now. Herb, you are silly. There is only one nation or two that are experiencing war, not the whole world. You're right. You're right. We give attention to the one little segment that doesn't function because it's very dramatic. How many of you watch television? And especially how many of you watch the news? What idiots we are! What idiots! As a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. We watch these things that are tragically going on in the world, and then we wonder why our lives are filled with sorrow and sadness and so forth. We wonder, hey, you all do it. In the restaurant this morning, they had a number of TVs going, and they were telling all about the tragedy that was happening here or there. Not here, not in Jamaica. Not in this paradise, not in this heavenly place, but this heavenly place filled with all of these beautiful angels are filling their mind with the tragedy of the world. As a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. Now, this is what the alchemists were teaching us. And they said, you know, to the pure, all is pure. If you keep your thought pure, your life will be pure, your world will be pure, everything you do will be fantastic and wonderful. Do you believe in yourself? You can. Do you believe in the world, that it's a wonderful world and a great world, and that this is a world filled with peace and love and harmony? You see, the peace song, you all heard the peace song, haven't you? Now there is peace on earth, and it began with me. Now there is peace on earth, a peace that is meant to be, with God as our Father, and in our heart. Know the words, know the song, know the idea, live it. Now there is peace on earth. Now, these scientists in Czechoslovakia, these alchemists, as wonderful as they were telling me the secret of life. Now, you've probably all seen Fantasia, and you've probably all seen Mickey Mouse as this sorcerer's apprentice, remember? And Mickey Mouse was just having such a good time, and the sorcerer said, bring water into the area that I need the water to work with. And so he did. And so he thought, well, why should I do all this work? I'll have the rooms do the work and carry the buckets down here and fill this fountain so it's ready for the boss. And they did. But then what did he do? What did he do that was the big mistake of his life? He took a nap. And we all take naps. We all take naps when we know the truth. And we don't stand by the principle, stand by the truth at all times. Now, today, our topic is about stem cells. And I'm going to tell you another name for stem cells. The law of cause and effect. Stem cells has another name, the law of cause and effect. Because the stem cells, as scientists tell us, are born 10,000 of them every day in our brain. 10,000 stem cells every day in our brain. Now, these stem cells are the undifferentiated cells. They are cells that have not been told to be eyes, ears, nose, and throat. They haven't been given a job yet. They're just there awaiting our instructions. And if we don't give them instructions, the cells that are nearby tell them, hey, come on in, the water's fine. Come on in and be in my brain. And my brain says, I'm limited. I don't know how to do things. My brain says, I don't understand what's going on in the world. I'm sort of stupid, you know, and I got to go learn things and I got to understand things. And the stem cell says, hey, whatever you say, you know, we're here ready, willing, and able to enter into whatever type of program you have for us. And so they become cells just like all the differentiated cells that are working in our body and working in the world. And you see, now there is peace on earth. And when we sing, now there is peace on earth, we bring that into our consciousness. Now, the older version of peace said, let there be peace on earth. Oh, let there. Oh, you know, you pray to some outside force, let there. And I changed it around to the words of Jesus. Now is the acceptable time. Now there is peace on earth, and it began with me. Now there is harmony on earth, and it began with me. Now there is harmony in my family, and it began with me. Now there is harmony in all areas of my life, and it began with me. Now, I told this little story about this little story, and my friends who heard me tell it, they said, well, we here in Jamaica use the paddle when children don't behave. I said, that's fine, if that's what you think is the thing to do. Did you take the pencil off the table in the office when you walked through a little while ago? No. I didn't take the pencil. No. And then you say, what pencil? Which also means I didn't take it. And all that sort of stuff. Well, number one, why would I ask you a silly question like that? You know, when you're so loaded with pencils, you would never pick up a pencil. You know, unless you were a kleptomaniac of pencils, you know. But no, you're not. We feel guilt in ourselves for things that we have nothing to do. We had nothing to do with things, and we feel this guilt in us. And this guilt is part of our inner fault. And we want to make a change in that. We want to put the cause in motion that says who we really are. And who are you really? Who are you? Are you the stem cells that are active in your body right now as old cells that are being fluffed off as you live? You see, every day, every part of our body is fluffing off cells and growing new ones. So every cell of our body is a stem cell in process. And the more we realize this, the more we know it. Now, I have a little song here I kind of like. It's from our Joy Song books. And it's a lot of fun. It goes like this. Now I am only perfection, and I'm perfect in every way. Each time I look in the mirror, I see only God in me. To know me is to love me. I know I am God, God I am. Now I am only perfection, and I'm perfect in every way. Now I am only perfection, and I'm perfect in every way. Now I know I am God, God I am. Now I know I am God, God I am. Now, you say, Herb, you say that you're God? Well, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Herb, I don't know what I'm coming to this session for. I think you're an idiot. I mean, anybody who goes around saying they're God, they should be taken away by the men in the white suits, you know, and locked up before they hurt themselves or somebody else. Anybody who says that they're God is terrible. Well, we have another little song that says, Why can I say I am God? Say I am God, say I am God. Why can I say I am God and know that it is true? Why can I say I am God? Say I am God, say I am God. Why can I say I am God? Because that's all there is. That's all there is. God is all there is. And if you try to say that God is not the negative things, you're wrong. God is all the negative things and all the positive things and all that exists. Now, what do you want to experience? You have the opportunity of choice. So you choose to live in a body that is whole and perfect. You choose to live in a body that's whole and perfect. So you tell these stem cells born in your brain, you say, all right, men, here we are, we're marching in the army here, we're an army of 10,000 stem cells waiting for direction. Okay, commander, what shall we do? And they say, why can I say I am God, say I am God? We teach the stem cells to realize they're divine. Now, they have no definition of who they are. They don't know. They don't know who they are. Now, if a little child were to come up to you, if your son were to come up to you and kick you, and you'd say, you little aha, and you want to whomp him good. But no, you're intelligent. You are a wise mother or a wise father. And you say, well, what's this all about? It's not the kid's nature to kick you. It's not your nature to be kicked. But it's your nature to wake up. And he's waking you up. And he says, bah! And he kicks you again. And you say, son, what seems to be the problem? Seems like you have something on your mind. And he kicks you again. Son, come on, sit down here. Tell me what's going on. You are intelligent enough to know that he's not kicking you because he hates you. He's kicking you because he wants your attention. And inside of us, things are kicking us because they want our attention. A cold is kicking you because it wants your attention. Headache is kicking you because it wants your attention. Death is kicking you because it wants your attention. You don't have to die. People who die, they say, well, let's see now, I'm going to get my friends all here, my aunts, my uncles, my cousins, my children, my wife, my husbands. I want to get everybody here so that when I die, I can say adios and go. You know what you're doing. You don't have to die. But you're being kicked by the concept. And so the little boy is kicking his mother. And finally the mother says, sweetheart, well, what's the problem? Well, Jimmy stole my bike. Why did Jimmy steal my bike? Your bike? I don't know. He just stole my bike. Well, let's go and talk to Jimmy. So they go out and they talk to Jimmy and they say, Jimmy, why did you steal Johnny's bike? Because. But that's not a good answer. Come on, why did you steal it? I'm unhappy. Oh, what are you unhappy about? Well, my mother is crying in the house and I think that I did something that is making her cry. Well, let's go talk to your mom. So together, they all go in the house and talk to the mother. And she's at the kitchen table crying her heart out. And they say, well, what's the problem here? And she says, well, my mother and my sister were driving in another area and they had an auto accident, were killed. And I don't know how to tell my son. And the lady says, well, tell him right out. And so Jimmy came in and she says, Jimmy, your grandma and your aunt were in a car accident and died. He says, oh, okay. Come on, Johnny, let's go play. It does not disturb people as much as we think it. It disturbs us because we miss them, because we think, did we do something wrong that came unto their life? And so then once they knew, once Johnny knew, once Jimmy knew, once the mothers knew what the problem was, and that it wasn't as big a problem as they thought it was, they could handle it differently. Then, the mother said to herself, why did it happen to my mother and my sister? And the lady next door said, Well, I've been studying metaphysics now all these years, and I'm quite a metaphysician. And metaphysics, we say one thing. Metaphysics is loving myself for no good reason. Metaphysics is loving myself for no good reason. And but why did they have the accident? Why did they die? Well, now, did they get in their car and say, it is a terrible weekend traffic, that it's dangerous, it's this and that, my brakes are not too good, and so forth? Did they put all these causes in motion and before they even started driving? And they did. And what could they have done? They could have said, I surround my car with my pure white light of love, and all its ways are peace, and all its paths are pleasantness. And the way is open before me. I'm the pure white light of love. I surround this car with my pure white light of love. All its ways are peace, and all its paths are pleasantness, and the way is open before me. I am the pure white light of love. I surround this car with my pure white light of love. All its ways are peace, and all its paths are pleasantness, and the way is open before me. And watch how you drive down the road. Just watch. Just watch how open it is. Now, if you say, oh, this is a busy day, I wonder if I'll get through, the traffic is going to be so heavy, and I won't be able to get here and there, and it's going to keep me from this, and the traffic's going to keep me from that, and the traffic's going to keep me. Hey, Say, did we say something like that yesterday? Did we say something like that yesterday? And what sort of things did we experience? Yes, I said we. Now, don't do that. Don't empower anything you do not want to empower. Elma says, I'm whole and perfect. And come right up and put your glass of water where you like. You never disturb me. You're wonderful. What happens? Is that microphone on too? Yeah, that's fine. That's fine. Bring it over. Yeah. Now, is that what we want to happen? Thank you. Is that what we want to happen? This is on good. Is that what you want to happen? Is that what you want to happen? Do you want harmony, peace, love? Do you want to drive in a beautiful area? Now, you get in your car and you say, I wonder if it's going to work. You put the cause in motion of wonder. My car always works perfectly. My car always takes me where I want to go. And even that's a doubt. See yourself where you're going. You see, these are the cause and effect ideas that are so powerful. Do you think that the stem cells are confined to your brain alone, or to mental activities alone, or things like that? No way. Do you know that if you were to say to your 10,000 stem cells, and you were to say to them, there now is peace on earth, and it began with me, you know what would happen? You would experience peace on earth in every area of your life. Every area of your life. Without any differentiation, without any area that's exempt, but every area. Every area. Now, is that what you want? Do you want to experience wholeness in every area of your life? Then you want to begin to learn how to use these stem cells wisely. Now, we have here, it's a good one too. It's another song. If a body want a body that is well and strong, he must think a perfect body. Good mic here. Think it all day long. Make your mind acknowledge your body perfect, perfectly. You'll demonstrate a perfect body, even you and me. If a body want a body that is well and strong, he must think a perfect body, think it all day long. Make your mind acknowledge your body perfect, perfectly. You'll demonstrate a perfect body, even you and me. Now, these are positive songs. These are songs that bring results. I'm an old cowboy, on the lone prairie. I lost my horse and I'm walking free. I got no shoes and I got no hat, and I feel like I'm gonna drop on back. I'm an old cowboy on the lone prairie.
Now, is that what the cowboy sang, really? The cowboy sang,
I'm a happy cowboy riding on my horse. I am a happy cowboy going every place. I'm a happy, happy cowboy. I am happy as can be. And my words, they show exactly what I am. He knows how I rhyme these things so well, too. But you see, this is what you do. Every word you think, every idea you say, you should put where your body can take it.
I have an experience of a broken leg.
Yeah.
See that?
Yeah,
I got a broken leg. I say, my leg is whole and perfect. My leg is whole and perfect.
That thing is broken.
My leg is whole and perfect. My leg is whole and perfect.
That thing is broken.
My leg is whole and perfect. Don't tell anybody else. You tell yourself. Because you're telling your white stem cells, okay, boys, get down there and repair that situation. Bring that back into its original purity and integrity. Bring it back into its original purity and integrity.
Mm-hmm.
Think about it. I was walking down the hall in religious science, and I heard the echo of Dr. Holmes, and the ordination class was going on in the building, and this one young woman, dynamic, forceful, fantastic woman, was walking along the hall, and Dr. Holmes says, hi, and she says, oh, Dr. Holmes, how wonderful to see you, and he says, you know, you walk good, you're a very special lady, you're a very special lady, you walk good, and she said, well, thank you, Dr. Holmes, and he says, have you finished your ordination class yet? No, I have another 6 months to go. Well, you walk good. You are ready. And he says, right this moment, I ordain you as a minister of the Church of Religious Science. Right this moment. Now, he did that often. Maybe once or twice a month. He would find some soul taking the courses who was tuned into it, who was alive to it, who is ready to go with the alchemists in the basement of Charles University and learn their secrets. Now, I was telling you about Mickey Mouse and Sorcerer's Apprentice. And what did he do? Did the sorcerer mislead him? No. He gave him a little secret. And he used that little secret incorrectly. You and I sometimes use that little secret incorrectly. I was driving up the turnpike, the New Jersey Turnpike, to go to LaGuardia Airport. I'd never been there, and it's an interesting location. And so I took out my beautiful little iPhone here, and I pressed the button on the iPhone where it says Maps. And then up came the map of the area that I was going to. And I pressed another, there's the direction on the streets and so forth. And here's the satellite view. And then here's a list. And it lists all the streets that I'm supposed to go down to let me know exactly what I'm to do. Quite nice. So I'm driving along, you know. And finally I said to myself, this is silly. I have more brains than that. And so, I just said to myself, all right, 95 runs all the way from Delaware, where my sister lives, where I was visiting, up to LaGuardia. It runs all the way up there. It's just when you get up by LaGuardia that you got to look at a few little turn streets here. And so, I stopped looking at my little guide that was telling me all the things to turn and do, and just merrily drove along, as long as it said 95 and New Jersey Turnpike, I was okay. And I stayed and I stayed and I stayed. Then when I got up to the top end, I said, oh, this is confusing. Herb, you are stupid. You're putting the wrong cause in motion. You're putting the wrong cause. And I went over one bridge three times. You know,
And it's a toll bridge. $4.50 each time. Now, that is absolutely stupid. But I stopped at the other side of the bridge and I said to people, where am I supposed to go? And they said, you're supposed to go over there. And then they said, you're supposed to go over there. And I didn't go there. Well, finally, I realized the LaGuardia Airport was east. And so I said, I am here, and here is the crossroad. This is east, and this is west. And so I will just turn east, and I will drive east on a main freeway or highway. And I drove east on the main freeway, and boo, boo, boo. And then all of a sudden, it's like, LaGuardia Airport, LaGuardia Airport, turn here, turn there, do this, do that, LaGuardia Airport, put back your rental car here, this is all set for you, LaGuardia. Why do we wait so long before we pay attention to the divine within? What should we say? What should we say? Come on. I know that I know that I know the divine in me knows the answer. So, we say this here. I know. Divine in me is the answer. When we say, I know that I know that I know the divine in me is the answer, we are putting a cause in motion. Now, I know that I know that I know God in me is the answer. I know that I know that I know I am the answer. Do you say, I am God? Why can I say, I am God? Because that's all there is. Now, why don't we say this? This is the secret that they have been telling us. How many times have you heard people say to children or adults or what have you, come on, keep going. You're almost there. You're almost there. You're almost there. You've heard that? You're almost there. Well, you see, we give up short of the mark because we don't really believe it. Now, who can give me the answer to this question? 2 times 2 is? My God, come on. 4. You too. 4. Come on. 4. 4. 2 times 2 is 4. 2 times 2 is 4. And you know what happens when you know that 2 times 2 is 4? You know that 2 times 4 is 8, 2 times 8 is 16, and so on. And you know all sorts. You know the foundation of mathematics, and you can move on with it. And it's fun. And so when teachers make mathematics fun for students, mathematics is a course they love. I have a student in London. She is a mother who was married, and then she and her husband split up. Now she's raising her kid herself, and she was a banker. And she worked in the bank and did very, very well. But she wanted to work in mathematics because she likes mathematics more than just money. You know, she had the money consciousness, I'll tell you about that. But she worked in this bank. And so what did she do? She says, I am going to get my master's degree in mathematics and be a mathematics professor at the university. So while she's raising her kid, while she's working on her full-time job, she is working nights and going to school nights whenever necessary, and taking courses in mathematics and doing a 4-year course for her master's in 4 months. Brilliant! Brilliant! She didn't have to take all the classes. She read the books. And she knew what the books were. Brilliant woman! And then she is a good student of ours, and she said, you know, Dr. Byer, I'd like to come out and teach in the university out in San Diego. And I said, well, fine. And so she said, I want to get a nice house out there, so I'm going to come out and visit and look at the houses. So she came out to San Diego and La Jolla, you know, that's the posh area, and she looked at houses there. That's her consciousness. That's her consciousness. Top dog in anything she does. And she found a $300,000 home as a real buy. And I said to her, yeah, you can probably get a loan on that. She said, oh no, I'm paying cash. Where did she get the cash? Shut up. It's none of your business, her. It's none of your business how her consciousness produces that for her. It's none of your business where it comes from. You never doubt anything that she does. You never doubt anything that anybody does. You see, this is why telling other people some things sometimes puts a doubt in there. And it keeps us from accomplishing what we want to do. Her, I'm holding perfect. Dangly leg. Ha! You don't show it to anybody. You just speak your word. I'm holding perfect. You know? People who have cancer, they love it. You say, how terrible, Herb. That's terrible, terrible, terrible. No, they love it. They tell everybody about it, too. But what is it that brings cancer into our life? Anger, frustration, emotional upset, tension, anxiety of every kind. That's what brings it in. Now, what's going to bring it out? Balance, balance, balance. And that's what we learn to do with our stem cells. We tell our stem cells, you are balanced. I am balanced. I am harmonious. And then all the tension goes away. Now, I went up to somebody the other day and I took my fist and did this to him, did that to him, you know. And you know what he did? He flinched. Of course, he didn't know me. But he flinched. He was afraid I might hit him. And he thought that his flinch would keep me from hitting him if I wanted to hit him. He was silly. But he flinched. And I said, that every time you flinch, every time you say, every time you do that, you're closing off the enzymes in your body from flowing freely to do the normal activity. Not the healing activity, the normal activity in your body. And the normal activity of your body, of course, is perfect health. But this is what the white stem cells do. These undifferentiated stem cells, they see this tension. They say, oh, you don't want that to function right? Oh, you don't like that? Oh, you know, we got 10,000 going today. We got 10,000 fresh ones tomorrow to jump right in there and be anti, anti, anti. Is that what you want? No. I'm sure you all heard of Mother Teresa. Mother Teresa was never against anything, but she was for everything that she believed in. She was for everything that she believed in. Are you for everything that you believe in? Do you stand up for everything you believe in? Now, do you have the most wonderful mind and body in the world? Thank you. Is your mind and body so beautiful, so wonderful, that it's just unbelievable? Do people come up to you and say, I like you. I don't know what it's all about, but I come close to you and I just feel good. I just feel wonderful. And what's going on? You like yourself. And so they like you. If you don't like yourself first, the rest of the world is not going to be interested in you. You see, if we put these white stem cells, these undifferentiated stem cells to work, to manifest the harmony, the peace, the love, the joy, the goodness that we are, we're it. A man is in a boat, lost in the ocean, and he's run out of water, run out of everything, and he says, I'm going to die. And so he said, might as well help it. He flops over the edge of the boat and drowns. And the other guy sitting in the boat says, no way, no way, no way. I am living, I'm happy, I'm healthy, I'm perfect, but I'm healthy, happy, and I'm living. And, hey, I'm really not thirsty either. My body is made up of 98% water, and it has plenty of water. I'll just recirculate the stuff, and, you know, and use what I've got. And it worked. And so, next thing you know, this man who didn't jump over, who didn't try to die, who knew he was alive and knew that he was good, the rescue boat comes along. I had meal meditations. I've had a number of ranches up on the mountain, and my current ranch is 104 acres with meditation paths all over it, where we have the University of Healing, University of Philosophy, and all these other good things. Well, this was a place just before that where Dr. Edmund Bordeaux Seke, who wrote a number of books on the Essene philosophies of life, and he had heads of all the great philosophers along the pathways and so forth. It was quite charming. And many medical doctors and psychiatrists and other people, professional, came up to the mountain to see all of this. And they brought their families along. And so they would take a walk on the meditation path, and I'd tour them and what they were seeing. And we were in the stand of Genesis, I forget what we called it, the mountain of Genesis. And I was standing up on one rock, speaking to the group, telling them what Genesis was all about and how what Genesis meant to them. And a little boy said to his father, his medical doctor father, "Dad, I'm thirsty. Dad, you know, I've got this hypothermia, you know, this whatever I got, you know, what do you call it? I don't know the names of illnesses, and I don't want to. But he had this ability of needing to drink, you know, needing thirst." So the father said, "Oh, well, I better take him back and get him some water." And I said, "Do you mind if I talk to your son?" He said, "No." So I went over to the kid, he's 7 years old, and I said, "Do you know that 98% of your body is water?" "No." "And that if you ever get thirsty, just think you're using the water in your body to slack your thirst. Because you just think that you're thirsty. You just think you're thirsty. You just, your tongue just says I'm dry and things like that. You think you're thirsty." Now, how many people do you know who slobber? They slobber all over the place, and they're dying of thirst, but they're slobbering all over the place. Well, they're not dying of thirst. They're dying of the idea of thirst. And so I spoke to this young man, and I told him, I said, "You know, just start, you know, smacking your lips and start feeling water and moisture inside you and start feeling good." And the kid did. You know, very receptive. Very receptive. I mean, here I am, this crazy man on the mountain. So he's receptive. And he liked the stories I told also about the various people along the way. And so an hour and a half later, we arrived back at the campus headquarters. And there we have a swimming pool and we have a bunch of other things. And so the kid said, he didn't say anything back. He started running off with his friends, and his dad said, "Son, don't you want a drink of water?" "No, I don't need a drink of water." And he ran off to play with his friends. He could have had his water, but he didn't need it. He put the new cause in his mind that he didn't need it. He put the new cause, what is it, hypothermia or something like that? He put the new cause in his mind that he didn't need it. He didn't need it. And therein, he didn't need it. This is what we can each do to ourselves. We can tell ourselves who we are. Now, I'm going to read this couple of statements here to you because I think they're kind of nice. Called Science, Medicine, Metaphysics of Life and or Death. And if you like, we can run out some copies of this if it pleases you. Jamaica Walk Good. Science, medicine, metaphysics of life and or death. This is the most compelling topic. Okay, metaphysics is outside basic science and medicine, allowing for causation of existence, the principle which governs the judgmental, the fundamental nature of reality. Let's reread this. Metaphysics is outside basic science and medicine, allowing for the causation of its existence, the principle which governs the fundamental nature of reality. Metaphysics is looking at the fundamental nature of reality. Because we have no idea why God threw so many grains of sand on the beach. And as Abraham Lincoln said, God must have loved the poor people, he made so many of them. No, the poor people loved doing what they're doing. They loved doing exactly what they do. There does not have to be a poor or a rich person on the face of the earth. Everyone has adequacy in any area that they choose by putting the thought in motion. Okay, now, metaphysics is loving myself for no good reason. There's no reason why you love yourself. Why should you love yourself more than I would love myself? Well, you love yourself because, as you might say, you're God. That's nice. And you're wonderful, 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 you're wonderful. You keep saying that, you keep saying it, and pretty soon you believe it. But you don't act wonderful. You know, nose up in the air sort of thing. You go around with a charisma. And that charisma is the beauty of you. How many of you have ever heard of the Queen of England? Yeah. And the Queen of England is a kooky lady, really a kooky lady. She has no more brains than she was born with. She walks into a room, and when she walks into a room, everyone feels her presence because she loves herself so much. I am the Queen. I am worthwhile. I am a good lady. I have a responsibility to my people. I like me. Can you imagine the Queen of England saying to herself, I don't like me? Or any of her family? Now, I'll just make this aside in here for a minute. The Queen of England has done a very dastardly thing. The Queen of England is a royal person, named so by the government and by whatever other. She is the Queen. Now, the Queen of England is raising children. And these children one day will take over the throne. And so these children must learn all of the noble aspects of being royal. All of the noble aspects. Now, they do not learn the royal aspects of being noble associating with people who don't know the royal aspects of being noble. So, if the Queen allows her little angels to associate with the commoners, she is going to have a commoner develop out of that child. Not that they're bad or good, but the commoners are commoners. Now, Princess Di, she got the wrong message. She didn't know she was just a commoner. She didn't belong as a princess, but she did. Because she was quality. From the very beginning of her life, she always believed in herself. Oh, she had her moments of doubt when the prince was not doing the things he should have been doing. But she always believed in herself. She always believed in herself. Now, the queen, if she were to raise her children to only associate with royal children, either in her own kingdom or other kingdoms, preferably only in her own kingdom, her children would be the most magnificent royal beings on the face of the earth. But because she allows them to associate with others who are not royal, they brush off their attitudes on these youngsters. And as these youngsters grow, they feel, I should go out in a bar, and I should go out and do these things, and I should go out and have all these mazzy-dazzy-dazzy dances and stuff like that, and I should, you know, and I should be able to go around and have all the women I want to have and all. No! The prince should have no women until he gets married. The prince should never know sex until he gets married. That's the rule of the English nation. I don't know what it is here in Jamaica, but it's also but it's also the rule in the United States. Now, you say, Herb, you are crazy. Yes, I'm from the old school. But the point is, if it is right for the prince to do this, they should change the law and say everyone can do this. Not by just happenstance, but because it is right for everyone to do it. They should authorize everyone to go out and have free sex, free relationships and things like that. And you say, well, doesn't everyone, isn't that always the way? Hey, why do you think the world is in the fiddle that it's in? It's in the mess that it's in because we have said that's the way we've always done it. And when you say that's the way we've always done it, then you're back on point one. Do you play the piano? Sure, I play the piano. Do you play well? Yes, I do. Did you practice? Do you remember when you didn't play well? No, I don't. I only remember when I play well. Now, if you start remembering when you didn't play well, you're going to not play well. You're going to start missing your keys, missing your notes. If you are a professional musician, my wife is a professional pianist and organist, and if she ever made a foul, oh, it just tore her to pieces, which is not too cool. But the thing is, they don't expect to make mistakes. They follow the rules. They follow the program. And this is what our white stem cells, they don't care. They're undifferentiated. They will go hither and yon. They will go beneficial or non-beneficial, as far as you're concerned. We live in a universe in which we say, I like me. And we have a lot of neat little songs about that sort of stuff. And it would be something that you'd like to know sometimes, you know, something you'd like to have. Let's see here. This is just a few of my favorites, yeah. So, this is one that you all know. One that you all know. Is this what you believe? And here's how it goes. I believe for every drop of rain that falls, flowers grow. I believe that somewhere in the darkest night, a candle glows. I believe for everyone who goes astray, God within shows the way. I believe above the storm, the God within is always heard. My indwelling being is my real self. This is the word. Every time I hear a newborn baby cry, or touch a leaf or see the sky, then I know why I believe. The God within is always heard. The God within is always heard. When you believe, when you listen to the divine within, listen, listen, listen. Let the divine within be your theme. Now, back to the princes. The princes know when they're doing something wrong. They know when they're violating their princely position. Hey, you want to go to bed with a prince? And the girl said, wow, you know. Hey, you want to go to bed with a commoner? Well, I don't know. I don't really like you, you know. But you see, a prince is something special. It's something special. It should not be bandied about with abandon. It should be recognized as the most beautiful, wonderful, charismatic experience in the world. And that's what each of us are. We are each prince and princess. We are each king and queen. We are each ruler of our dynasty. And it's up to us to keep a clean house, to run a trim ship. It's up to us to keep ourselves in order. Because if you don't keep yourself in order, then you'll be in disorder. Are you ready to walk that beautiful path? Are you ready to be that beautiful being that knows who and what you are? You see, I'll finish reading the few statements here. Physical science and medicine requires all be logical and reasonable. Metaphysics is loving myself for no good reason. Science and medicine reconcile with the concept that the limit of the human lifespan is the limit of human technology. Can you imagine that? The limit of human technology. And so, they're reaching. But right now, the scientists are doing the unbelievable. They are going as fast or faster than the speed of light. They are breaking all the barriers that they had set for themselves not too many years before. They are unlimited. They are going out into space where no man has ever gone before. They have the Hubmobile. Humble. Let's say the... Yeah. They have this satellite going out there. And on a battery, how many years ago did it go? 10? 12 years? 12 years on a battery? My goodness, we should make batteries for us like that. Yes. And it's still sending back color pictures. Isn't that spectacular? Sending back color pictures of the universe that it sees out there in the broadness of its scope and majesty. Yes. Nothing's impossible. You can accomplish any goal that you have in your heart. Now, we'll finish these couple statements here, and then we'll come back to how you can accomplish them. Metaphysics uses the tool of unconditional love to be fulfilled. Metaphysics uses the tool of unconditional love to be fulfilled. I unconditionally love my world. I unconditionally love everybody in it. I unconditionally love all circumstances, and that fulfills all things for me. People love me, and I love them. And I cannot conceive of anyone in the world not loving me, because I cannot conceive of anyone in the world that I do not love. I love everybody. I go around hugging everybody. And sometimes the men say, "What's the matter with you, hugging men?" Well, men are nice to hug too. I'm a man, you know. I like hugging. I like to be hugged. It's fun. Hush now. But that's good. Okay, now. By tricking, this is written by a scientist. By tricking natural selection, one scientist, an evolutionary biologist at the University of California in Irvine, Mike Rose, reporting in Discovery magazine, waits until fruit flies are older before letting them reproduce. The ones who do have already proven that they can only live that long, because then they die shortly after they reproduce, and have physiological withdrawal to reproduce multiple generations. And this procedure makes the ones who have been withheld from having relationships, reproducing, to live twice as long. So they have given the fruit fly twice the length of a normal fruit fly's life. Now you say, well, what has that got to do with us? It shows you it can be done. It shows you it can be done. Digressing from here, in China, they believe that taking a stem cell from a source, the embryo, or from the umbilical cord, or whatever they take it from, and they take the stem cell, and that they take dozens of them, they bombard them into the brain. And this is what they're doing, these scientists in China. And this one young boy from England went over there because he couldn't move his hands and he couldn't do anything, and they felt that if they could put the stem cells into his brain, it could help bring his brain back to normal. And so, after they had done this, a couple of stem cells functioned, and he was able to move his fingers and open his eyes a little bit and move his lips. And so they went back and did it again. And the scientists again bombarded his brain with all these stem cells. And he could open his eyes a little more, and he could do a little more, but nothing really beneficial. Now, unconditional love does beautiful things. Scientists who are unconditionally loving and also very careful with the number of stem cells they have take a stem cell, put it into the brain of a diseased animal, and the brain completely overhauls itself. Completely. They put it into the liver that is not functioning properly, gently, lovingly. One stem cell, and the liver goes back to its original purity and integrity. They put it into the heart, and the heart, which was having many malfunctions, went back to its original purity and integrity. You don't have to believe me on any of these things. Go into Wikipedia, which is on Microsoft, which is on Encyclopedia on the internet, and they have all this stuff. Just look up stem cells, and it'll just blow your mind. It's new stuff all the time, every day. And you look way back when they first started doing this, like 10, 12 years ago, and into today, the things that they have come are just absolutely magnificent. And they're showing, now, those are stem cells that are placed physiologically. They're placed by a scientist with his equipment. You have 10,000 of them that you can mentally place in your body, anywhere. Now, if you have a heart problem, you say, okay, stem cells, go to work on my heart. Get busy. And the stem cells will go to work on your heart. And when the stem cells, they have no limits. They have no limit. They just jump in your bloodstream and ride right down to your heart. Really, they know the way. They're playing around. They're having lots of fun. Now, you give them a job, and you say, hey, this is it. Okay. We spoke about this lady who was in Miami, Florida, and she had a class of mathematicians. She was teaching in high school math. And so she went in there, and all the kids in the high school math class were doing okay, but nothing special. And so then she started to call them what? What'd you call them? Geniuses. She says, well, my geniuses, how are we today? Well, my geniuses, what are we doing today? Well, my geniuses, you're fantastic, you're glorious. And Lorene Slater taught her class this, and at the end of the year, all of the students were geniuses. All of them. And Dolores Cheeks, up in Montreal, Canada. Dolores Cheeks is a single lady. Charming, beautiful, dynamic, and that sort of stuff. One of our students for a long time. And she has classes. She is such a capable, talented lady. She knows she's good. She knows she's wonderful. And the school district gives her all the toughies. So they gave her one class of 100 people in it, which had 41 different cultural nationalities in it. 41! And she said that was the most exciting class she ever had. Because all she had to do was to tell each one of the students that they were spectacular, that they were geniuses, that they were wonderful, that they were marvelous beings. She didn't have to tell them how to cooperate with each other. She told them that they were wonderful, marvelous beings. She told them that they were good people, that they're geniuses, that they're wonderful. And when her class was over, many more joined it during the class. When her class was over, they were the foundation of unity in the school. And then, while she's teaching these day's classes, and she's an utterly amazing lady. Her father had been the president of Guyana at some recent past, and her aunt was one of my students up in New York. But she is just an amazing lady. She doesn't know that that's a lot of work. She doesn't know that that's tough. Because she looks at each person in the class as an individual and sees them as geniuses, as beautiful. And they all come up to her, and she's a black lady, they all come up to her and they say to her, well, white teacher, and they call her that, well, white teacher, and I said, why do they call you that? Because I teach like the white teachers teach. But, well, white teacher, and they said, you are fantastic. We love you. And they give her gifts. High school kids giving their teachers gifts. They give her gifts. They give her beautiful bronze statues. They give her tokens of their various religions and things like that, of their various homeland cultures and so on. And they love her. They love her. She loves herself. And she says, I'm home hurt. She called one day on the phone and she says, Dr. Riley, I have a problem. And I said, good. And she says, this is what my problem is. I said, good. Good. Wonderful. Good. Her. I said, if you want to tell me you have a solution, I'm happy to work with you on your solution. Do you want me to work with you on your solution? Do you want me to work with you on what you want to experience in your life? Or do you just want to keep on working on the problem you have in your life? What do you want to do? What do you want to do? And she, oh, of course, of course, of course, of course, I know better, I know better, I know better. And you see, we fall back even when we know better. She teaches these kids are whiz-bangs, and they're wonderful, and they love her. And then she forgets to practice it on herself. Somebody said something about that, didn't they? Anybody remember? Possession! Heal thyself! Mm-hmm. And we'll get to that. Okay. By tricking the natural selection, metaphysics is the art and science of eternal attitude. Metaphysics is the art and science of eternal attitude. You have an eternal attitude. I am immortal. I am wonderful. I am all. I am forever. I am younger every day. I am more fantastic every day. I am filled with power, with love, with joy, with peace and harmony. I am that I am. Where did you hear that? That came from the Bible too, didn't it? All these neat statements that we love came from the Bible. I am that I am. Position, heal thyself. Religious Science is a very old-fashioned organization. It teaches people that it's done unto you according to your belief. And of course, it's the first one to ever have said that, you know, after the Bible, and teach that. But what happens when you do that? What happens when you do that? What happens when you start believing in yourself? Everything opens up for you. Everything opens up for you. Now, what do the theatrical actors do just before they go on stage? What do they say to their compatriots? Break a leg. Well, actually, there's more to that than appears. Because the understudies were the ones who thought that. And they thought that, and they thought it so strongly that it became a sprick word, you know. And because it became a sprick word, it became something like that. Now, what do Jamaicans say to other Jamaicans? I'm sorry? Shush up. What do Swiss? What do Jamaicans say to other Jamaicans under any circumstance? Walk. Good. Now, where'd that come from? Now, walk good. What does that mean? That means everything is in divine order. Your body functions perfectly. Your wheelchairs are put aside. Your walkers are put aside. Your canes are put aside. You walk with stamina. You walk with joy. You walk with presence. And you walk with power. I had one student, one of their friends had an operation. And so they wanted an operation. So they decided they would have a new ball put in their hip because they felt that little pain there, you know. They were in their 80s and they felt pain. And so I told them, no, don't do that. Say, I'm home perfect. No, if she can have it, I can have it. So she went in, and that night they took the old ball out and put the new ball in. The next morning she came home with a new ball in her hip. No problem. And then she said, but, you know, she's walking around like this here, you know, favorite. Don't favorite. I said, stand up straight. Straighten up your body. Come on, up there. Be proud of yourself. I mean, women, they have chins, you know, and they have breasts. And put them out there and stick them out there and be proud of yourself. Stick out your chest. You don't think a thing when I say stick out your chest, do you? No. Men can stick out the chest. When women stick out their chest, you think that they're being silly, but they're being very beautiful. Now, that's part of our nature. That's part of who we are. Now, does a woman walk more beautiful when she walks stately? When she walks with her body in a proper relationship? Certainly. Does a man walk better when he's walking straight? When he's, you've heard of the United States Marines, how they oftentimes say they have a ramrod up their back because they walk so straight, you know. They're trained in the Marines to walk stiff. And all their life they walk this stiff. But they look great. And you know what else they do? You talk to Marines. Marines are young all of their life. They may add years, but they're always walking straight and true. They're always walking, unless they had some terrible injury that made it a little difficult. But most of them, and the majority of them are most of them, they have no problems. And the attitude. This is an eternal attitude. The attitude of, I am whole and perfect. The attitude of, I walk beautiful. The attitude of, I'm wonderful. These are what the stem cells work on. And if you think that you got something going for you that the stem cells should work on, then don't think of something that you got for the stem cells to work on. Don't think the stem cells should work on your cold. The stem cells are working on my perfect body. Every organ, action, and function of my body is perfect right now. Every organ, action, and function of my body is perfect right now. Every organ, action, and function of my body is perfect right now. All these little white stem cells are drizzling all over my head. Every organ, action, function of my body is perfect right now. Every organ, action, function of my body is perfect right now. I'm perfect. I'm 25. See, every organ, action, and function of my body is perfect right now. Be that. Believe in yourself. Now, you don't have to be a dynamo like me. You are. But the more excited you get about living, the more exciting living is for you. Really. My son had trouble in school. And one day he came home. He says, Dad, I want to become a pilot. Airplane pilot. He was 12, 13 years old. And I said, yay, something that interests him finally, you know. I took him scuba diving, sailing, and all the other sort of things that we do. And so, good. So, we went out to the airport and started taking lessons. Well, within a short time, he surpassed me. His interest level was right there. And he passed all the tests. He couldn't do well in school. But with his airplane test and with the requirements of the Federal Aviation Authority and all this, he did great. Then he took flight training. Here he is, a preteen. Maybe it's 12, 13, 14, 13, 14, somewhere in there. And he took flying lessons. And they're letting him fly over populated cities, you know, this young punk kid, you know. But he was just like born in the pilot seat. And he flew and he flew. Then he soloed. You know what solo means? Alone. And he went flying alone. Now, they don't let him have his license until he's 16. So he had to wait to get his license until he was 16. But he could solo until then all he wanted. Fly any plane that he checked out on, and we bought a couple of planes and he flew them and just had fun. And he remodeled them and rebuilt them, and he just loved it. But he put his heart into it. You know, where he couldn't do other things, he did that just beautifully. And his writing and grammar and still is not all that hot, but you talk to him. He's 52 years old now. You talk to my son Mark, and you think you're talking to a university professor. He uses perfect language. He uses perfect, can't write worth a darn, but he uses perfect grammar, perfect construction, and he knows all these things. And the aerospace scientists at McDonnell Douglas would come to our Experimental Aircraft Association meetings, and they would see his projects that he would bring in, asking for suggestions on how to improve it. And they would steal his projects on how to make hydraulics for airplanes and put it on their jets. Now, he never saw anything from it. And I said, Mark, doesn't it make you feel a little sad that they steal your project? No. I wasn't using it anyhow. You know, if they can use it, great. And it merely showed me, hey, they're using my stuff. That's great. I'm happy. You know, he designed more. So now he designs ultralight airplanes and builds them and sells them all over the world. And he just has a ball. He loves doing it. But you see, he didn't know what his dream was. I mean, he waited till he was 12, 13 years old before he knew what his dream was. I mean, what a retarded kid, you know? But no. No, he was brilliant. He knew once he found it. And he put his whole heart into it. I said to him, Mark, I'll send you down to Florida to this aviation school where you can learn all these things if you want. No, no, Dad, just buy me the books. I'll study the books, and I'll be better than the courses can teach me. And he is, and he was, and he does. And the FAA comes to him and buys all of their ultralights from him because he builds the best in the world. Now, amazing kid, because that's my son. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's my son. But, you see, I encouraged him. I encouraged him to do whatever he wanted to do, however he wanted to do it. I had many newspapers and magazines around the country, and I'd go out writing farm features about different farmers and things, and I'd take him along on my motor scooter, on my Lambretta. And he'd stand in front of me, and we'd drive out there, totally illegal today. but we would take pictures and write stories on these farms, and the farm kids would grab him right away, because he's maybe 6 or 7, or 5 or 6 at the time, and they would put him on their horses, and they'd drive around their farms and show him everything, and my kid, you know, hey, no problem, I never said that. Hey, he's going to have a ball. And he came back and he had stories to tell that were just wonderful. But he lives in a positive frame of mind. He lives in a positive life, in a positive world, because he has a positive papa, you know, and a positive mom. But the thing is, what about you? Let's finish this here. Fruit flies can potentially live forever. They do not, because they have a high likelihood of dying by accidents. Metaphysics is the mind utilizing the brain. Metaphysics is the mind utilizing the brain. Now, your brain is not your mind. Your brain is this vehicle in your head. It's like your heart. Is this your heart? Is this your heart? No, your heart is your love nature, right? Your heart is your loving nature. And so, this is not your mind. What is your mind? Your mind is the universal mind, the mind of the divine, the mind of the infinite. It's the allness, it's the overallness, it's everywhere present. Now, how do you tune in to this universal mind? All of you have used a radio and brought in many stations. When I was a child, I had chicken pox or something, measles or whatever, and so I had to stay in bed. And so my mother bought me a little crystal set. That's a little piece of crystal, which is a stone that has some sort of properties to it, and a little wire like a pin. And this led to my earphones, and I could move the wire around on this stone and tune in different stations. Well, how absolutely outrageous. Some people have their teeth filled, and then they can begin hearing radio stations. They can begin hearing the, yes, it's true. you might profit on that, you know, and tune in your garage door tuner. This one to open the garage door, and this one to close it and stuff. But those things happen. Now, we tune in to the infinite because we want it. Now, how many television stations do you receive here in Jamaica? A lot of them? A lot. Okay, now, do you listen to them all? Now, would you say there are maybe 3 or 4 that you listen to regular? And all the rest are gone with the wind. Okay, now, what are you doing with it? Maybe the rest of them have some good stuff, and maybe not. But the 3 have what you want to hear. The crime, the horror shows, the news reports. The sitcoms about the young people living together unmarried and their mothers having affairs with other people and what have you, and the homosexuality and all these things that are going on. I mean, it's fantastic what we have available to us to listen to if we want. Now, where are your values? Where are your values? Once you know what your values are, as a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. Once you know where your values are, then that is your tuning device, which tunes in your brain to the infinite mental beingness. There was a child who went up to his dad and said, "Dad, you're a scientist. You're a scientist. Dad, how did things start? How did we begin?" And the dad says, "Well, son, I'll tell you a story." And the boy says, "Oh, good, good, good. Can I bring my friends?" So he brought his friends. They all gathered around him in the living room, sitting on the floor. And the dad says, "Well, here's how it is. One time, in the timelessness of all, there was one little atom floating around in the nothingness. And that little atom was as lonely as he could be. Just a lonely little atom in a chaos patch, you might say. And so, what happened? This atom said to itself, I want somebody to play with. And he didn't know that there was a somebody to be somebody of and to play with. But he said, I want somebody to play with. And so, nobody answered. And then he says, I'm going to hold my breath and hold my breath and hold my breath until I have somebody to play with. Well, he held his breath and he held his breath and he held his breath until, boom, he blew up into a million, zillion, trillion, billion pieces. The Big Bang. And with that Big Bang is we're getting a little bang here too. With that Big Bang, he became all the stars in the heavens, all the galaxies, all the earths, all the existence that exists, all the matter. Out of the one atom, all matter existed, was brought forth. We all know that of the universe, only a tiny part of that universe is matter. Okay? Now, what is that matter? Now, we said that matter is substance, it's atoms. No. What makes up an atom? Can you tell me? What's in an atom?
Energy.
Exactly. What makes up the atom is energy. And that energy is what makes up the universe. And that energy is what makes up us. And that energy is what the universal mind is. Now, think of this. Energy is the universal mind. It is what we might say God. Energy is the universal mind. Energy does not know anything. It is everything. It is everything. Only humans know relative and absolute. Energy is absolute. Energy has no limitations on it. Energy can spew out everything and withhold itself and be nothing. It can be the absolute allness, and it can be the isness and or the nothingness. Now, you are mostly nothingness. I am mostly nothingness, and I am all energy. But this all energy is all made up of, what would you say? How does energy function? With vibrations. And how does vibrations, with the pluses and the minuses, just like the computer, because it's the magnetic forces that are backing up and moving around and vibrating, and it's fun, fantastic. It's fantastic. Now, this is the allness of the universe. This is the allness of the universe. This is God. This is the essence of all that exists. Now, you are just pure energy, differentiated. You chose to become a physical body. Now, do we have any non-humans in here today? Everybody is a human being. Well, you look all different for some reason or other. How come you all look different if you're all human beings? Wouldn't all human beings look alike? Eye, ear, nose, and throat sort of thing, you know? Wouldn't all human beings have the same beingness? No. Not at all. Why is it that all human beings are not all the same? What's that? Variety. We have within us the right opportunity or situation to choose what we like to do. We can sing happy songs, or we can sing sad songs. We can be happy people, or we can be sad people. Our life is filled with the possibility of anything we want to be. Here we have a space scientist, and here we have the president of Jamaica, and here we have people of such fantastic qualities. And you didn't know that. You didn't know that, because they just do it quietly. How many of you have ever thought what you would do if you were the president of this nation? None of you? Oh, that's interesting. Okay, at least one, two. But how many of you have ever thought, and did you want to do something that would hurt this nation? Did you want to do something that would bless the nation? Did you want to do something that would make the nation a nation of the people, for the people, by the people? Did you want to make it so that everything about this nation was the essence of quality, that all the nations of the world look at this nation and say, that is the nation we want as our sample? Yes, because that's what it is. We have a song that came from the British, and God bless America, land of love. Now, I changed that. One of my students said, but Dr. Barney, I'm God. Shouldn't I say, I bless America, land that I love. I stand beside her and guide her with the light, through the night with the light from within, from the mountains to the prairies, to the valleys, white with oceans, white with foam. I bless America, my home sweet home. I should really do it from the beginning and not fiddle around with it there. I mean, that's one I should know. Very good. Okay, now. Here we go. I bless Jamaica, land that I love. I stand beside her and guide her through the night with the light from within, from the mountains, from the hillsides, to the valleys, to the oceans white with foam. I bless Jamaica, my home, sweet home. I bless Jamaica, my home, sweet home. Isn't that nice? See? That puts it in the right direction. And that's what we want to do. We want to start doing these things so that they will benefit us in the finest and the greatest way. Okay, now, we have a few minutes before we have our lunch break. To age means that you are less and less able to survive and reproduce with time. This is a scientist's observation. But aging is in no sense any basic feature of cell biochemistry. The cell is designed to live forever. You can put a cell in a petri dish and feed it normally, and you take away the attitudes that get into it through the nervous system and so forth, and it will live forever. There are lots of organisms that have the same kind of cells that humans have that do not have any aging at all. And the organisms like the hydras, the sea anemones, and some types of flatworm, and quite a few grasses and shrub species. Aging is just not some God-given inevitable thing. It is something you can change and control. Metaphysics deals with the undifferentiated stem cells, guiding them in their beneficial use to the wearer. Tested fruit flies have postponed aging and also have enhanced personal performance. These flies are dynamic and vigorous and alive, while normal flies are barely moving around at the age of these flies. Metaphysics is the factor of us, which is vital, dynamic, alive. Humans might live longer from the scientific point of view by finding an enzyme, this is a scientist talking, by finding an enzyme which slows aging and even reverses it. But scientists are cautious of this because aging is very complex. It's mental, is what they mean to say. Metaphysics is unhampered by the complexity because it issues a command. Be myself and have fun. This is what I command each one of you. Be yourself and have fun. If you are yourself and have fun, you know what happens? You're a happy person. If you're being yourself and having fun, you're not picking on somebody else. If you're being yourself and having fun, you're looking at all the world as a glorious place to be. You're looking for places to have fun. You're looking for places to enjoy yourself. You're looking for places to be yourself and do the things that turn you on. Now, are you ready for that? Are you ready to be turned on? Because that's a very powerful statement. Be myself and have fun.
Yes. Really something quite wonderful. Be yourself and have fun. It's not difficult at all. You are...
Be myself and have fun. 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 I am myself and I 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 have fun. You know, there's a song.
Can you go on to 12:30?
Can I what?
Can you go on to 12:30 before we
go on? Oh, yeah. Okay, good. That was what you scheduled? Yeah. That's fine. Yeah. Sure. Okay. Be myself and have fun. Now, why is it that we are not ourselves and having fun? All right.
What did your mother say to you when you
were little girl?
In other words, what your mother was saying, you might get into trouble because you're such a pretty little girl, and your mind is so full of interesting ideas, and you might get yourself in trouble. Watch it, watch it, watch it, watch it, watch it. If your mother were to say to you,
Sandra. Sandra, you are beautiful. Sandra, you are lovely. Sandra, you have lived in this family now, 18 years. And living in this family for 18 years, you now know the family's ethics. You now know our values. You now know what we feel is important.
And Sandra, I could let you loose in a bordello. I could let you loose, you know what that is? Yeah. I could let you loose in a den. I could let you loose in a den of iniquity. And everyone there would change because of you living your values. When you, when I, when we live our values, our world responds to it and respects it. I had one of my students, a very wealthy man, and a fine, handsome young son in high school, and the father said to the boy, how come you're spending so much time in the house? Why don't you get out and play with your friends? And the boy says, okay. So he went outside, and then 10 minutes later he's back in again. And the father says, how come you want to play? He loves herbology and he loves snakes. He collects snakes in his bedroom. Cool. So how come you're not out playing with your friends? Dad, well, how come? I mean, these are your buddies. You've been friends for years. Well, Dad, they're starting to take drugs. You know, the father did not believe that his own son had values that he had taught him. The son had values. He was not interested in drugs. He was not interested in doing anything contrary to the highest good of his temple of the living God. He was only interested in doing things that were beautiful and wonderful. And the kid is fantastic. The guy's daughter had so much father love, you know, smothering her. And her mother was a very fine professional woman, beautiful woman. And the father was a fine man, a good looking guy. But he owned organizations that manufactured chemicals, eye drops, and various other things for complexion and what have you, and owned a couple of drugstores. And the daughter, to herself, wanted to become a pharmacist, but she didn't want to go through her dad's program. She wanted to go through her own program. So she went to school and told her dad she was going to school, and he paid the way, you know. And so she went to the school, and she said, "How are you doing?" "Oh, just fine, just fine." Well, she graduated right up at the top of her class because she was interested. And then she went to work in an apprenticeship, as a pharmacist does. And so she was an apprentice for about 2 years, and her dad knew nothing about it. And then she came to her dad after she finished her apprenticeship and proved to herself that she could really do it. She said, "Dad, I think pharmacy is a good business." He said, "Well, yeah, I do too." And she says, "You know, I took the course in the university as a pharmacist. I'm now a qualified pharmacist, and I took my apprenticeship, and I passed just fine. You can talk to your friends. They kept their mouth shut from telling you that I was there. But now you know. But why didn't you let me help you?" "I wanted to do it myself. I wanted to prove to myself it's really what I wanted to do, not just because I wanted to get a hold of your drugstores and stuff like that when you retired or something and let go." Well, the father since sold his chemical business of Similazan and a few of the other chemicals for $20 million, something like that. And he's living comfortably. And he gave half to his wife, and he gave portions to his kids, and put it on certain programs for them because he didn't want them to spend it too fast. But the father is stupid. I was selling real estate, and I had a client, Mr. Gill, Walter Lawrence Gill, and you only called him Mr. Gill. You never called him Walter Lawrence Gill. And he had the Gill Electric Battery Company, and he made batteries for airplanes throughout the Second World War and other times. And his batteries are still being made very abundantly and very beneficially. Well, he would have me tour him around, riding in the back of my four-door Lincoln Continental convertible, looking at properties in the area. And we'd buy this, and we'd buy that, and we'd buy the other things, and he was very happy about it. Nice idea, huh? And we just had a great old time together. Well, I noticed that his daughter married a real estate, insurance broker. And he was doing okay. And they had a couple of kids, and they lived modestly in a modest home, and were doing fine. And so, I shouldn't have done it. My nose is so big sometimes. I wrote him a letter, and I said, "Dear Mr. Gill, you have a daughter whom you love very greatly, and you have two grandchildren you love very greatly, and you have a son-in-law. I guess you like him too, you know. You, Mr. Gill, are in your 87 years old, and you can pop off any time. And your daughter is going to inherit all of your moolah, all of your money. Now, she hasn't the foggiest idea of how to manage billions of dollars. You have just sold your Teledyne, you just sold your Gill Electric Battery Company to Teledyne Electronics and others, and they gave you stocks, and you got the equivalent of $8 billion. That's a lot of money. A lot of money. And I said, when you die, your daughter's going to have $8 billion. And what's she going to do? She's going to say, "Well, Let's spend. Let's buy a bigger house. Let's do this, do that. But if you will take your daughter into your business with you now, because he took a holding business to handle his money, and take your son-in-law in, and give them positions of management in the money, teach them how to handle the money. When you do pass on, they will not be built by somebody with their schemes. They will take this money and they will use it beneficially for themselves in any way. I mean, that's a lot of money. It takes a lot of doing to spend that kind of money. But they will have a lot of joy because you will have taught them the value of money. And you know, we learn the values at home. We learn the values at home. Bill Gates, he likes hamburgers, you know. He probably owns every hamburger joint in the world if he wished, you know. But he likes hamburgers. And Warren Buffett, he likes to go to thrift shops to shop. And he owns all the thrift shops. He gave Bill Gates, $35 billion to spend because he didn't know how to spend it. He was too penurious with his money. He held on to it too tightly, you know. But are you ready to go into the world and spend billions of dollars? Oh, yes. Don't kid yourself. Do you like yourself? Do you buy everything you want to buy? Do you delight in everything you want to delight in? Do you take care of your clothing? Do you put away your clothing nicely? Do you make sure it's nicely washed and dried and hung in your closet however you wish? Do you take care of your children? Do you teach your children to take care of their things? Do you tell your children, we can afford to buy the toy store, but we're buying you one toy at a time so that you can learn the values of playing with the toys? Now, you don't say that to the kid, he won't understand it. When I was a child, it was Depression years, and my dad was a building contractor, and we always had money coming in so that we could eat and be comfortable. But our neighbors were large manufacturing owners. They owned large manufacturing companies, and they didn't have a lot of money. Really, it's amazing. Here they are, millionaires, and didn't have a lot of money. And their kids would come over to our house because my mom always made meals that would feed as many of the neighbor kids that dropped in. I'm sure their mother and father would have liked to drop in too. But mother didn't tell us this until much later. Whenever we came home from school, we had to put our play clothes on, even though our school clothes were not all that great. We had to put our play clothes on and go barefoot, because the rest of the children in the neighborhood couldn't afford shoes, and mother didn't want us to look different from the rest of them. Even though in better times they would have been far superior to anything we were. But at that time, we were in a position to have enough and live comfortably. But you see, mothers sometimes do this. They teach us values, and we don't know these values are being taught. And when my teachers tell their students in school, you are a genius, the students have no idea what's going on. They have no idea that they're being insulted. They're being insulted. And their brain says, I'm a genius. Yes, I told the story about this from the Reader's Digest. The woman was a teacher, and she was teaching the underprivileged students. And as she taught the underprivileged students, she did okay. And they were underprivileged when they left her class. They were not anything more. They came in underprivileged and they left underprivileged. And she'd done this for 5 years. And so the principal said, you know, Miss Jones, I think it's about time for you to teach the above achievers, the positive achievers. And she said, oh, okay, that'd be fun. So during the summer vacation, the principal was transferred, and the new principal didn't know she was supposed to teach the above achievers. So they put her back into the lower achievers again, like she was before. But she thought she was teaching the overachievers. And she treated those kids like they were overachievers. And they would throw spitballs and they would do other crazy things. And she'd say, well, that's the way these kids who are so talented do oftentimes. They are silly, you know. And she trained those kids. Oh, come on, you can do this. You're smart. You're a genius. Come on, you can do this. You're a genius. You're fantastic. You can do it. She believed in them because they're overachievers. Little did she know. And at the end of the school year, her class graduated the top of the entire school because all of those kids thought and believed and were overachievers. They were giving what they had within them, which had never been drawn out before, because they were expected to be underachievers. Now, you expect your brain to be underachievers. This is a very important point.
Our brain, we'll use red. Our brain doesn't know the difference between being overachiever or an underachiever.
Oh, you don't hear him? I can speak louder too.
Our brain doesn't know whether we are overachievers or underachievers. I say it. We have to tell our brain this. Now, this is something we have learned which must be erased from our mind. So I'm going to write it very small. What is it? I want you to learn mathematics. I want you to learn mathematics. I want you to learn mathematics. Okay. Now, I say to him, you are a genius, and you are going to reveal. You're going to reveal that you know mathematics. You're going to reveal that you know mathematics perfectly, 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 perfectly. You are going to reveal it. It's not something you got to learn. It's not something you got to make come into your brain. It's let it out. You see, this is where our brain has been a very difficult thing for us. Our brain has caused us to be all tied up in knots. Sorry. We'll just pretend it's not there. Our brain is just sort of all tied up in knots. Our brain is like this impregnable, impervious circle. You can't get in here. See? You can't get in there. Nothing can get in there. This is what we say. This is what we say. Now, when we say that we are the total of the universe, when we are the total of the universe, we are the waves of the universe, there is no inside and outside of our brain. There is only one. And our brain is the total attitude of all knowledge, all wisdom, all beingness. Our brain has this. Now, but be careful. Once you have it, you're going to have to be selective how you're going to use it. And this is why people have this little corner that they're using. They're learning how to play a musical instrument. And they're playing the musical instrument very beautifully. And as they play the musical instrument very beautifully, wonderful things happen to them. Now, you, as you play the musical instrument very beautifully, don't be one-pointed. Be omnipointed. Universal, right? Last night after dinner together, and after the friends had left, we went into the dining room and turned off the lights and blew out the candles. And the music was playing on her music box. And I took her in my arms and I danced with her for about 3 or 4 minutes. And we just danced all over the living room and the dining room. And Sonia, we were watching, right, watching us and thinking to ourselves, my goodness. And what did Elna say? What did Dr. Lumsden say? She says, I wish we had a camera. But you see, this is the beautiful thing. Unlimited. She is a metaphysical master. She is a metaphysical mind. She is a creator.
She is the person who knows about raising children, knows about raising families, knows about government. She is called in by many governmental officials wanting advice on how to handle whatever they're doing properly. And you don't know this. All right, let's do this out here.
She is called in by the administrative departments, by these government officials. And who is your new legislative person here? Bruce Holding. Bruce Holding. Okay, now. Does Bruce Holding ever say to himself, let me see, how shall we handle this?
Do you think that? Do you think he ever says, how shall we handle this? What's that?
Yeah. And you know what's happening? See, Bruce Holding is saying, let me understand this. Let me outline with you. Let me understand this.
Values that your leader has here. Based upon the values that she is teaching to you and that she is living. Right, John? Right, John?
Yes.
Right, John?
Yes.
Yes. And you see, he's doing it. Now you say, oh, Herb,
I think that's sort of pushing it a little bit, you know. But no, that's not pushing it. That's saying the truth. And when you're saying the truth, you're never pushing it. Now, why is it that that's the truth? Because Bruce Golding is, and all of you, have your thoughts floating around, and you say, how should I handle this? And immediately, you click.
Immediately you click.
But you see, whenever you ask the question, you are one with the universal consciousness. And as one with the universal consciousness, the answer is there. You don't have to search. It's not a big consciousness. It's not a consciousness that's way out there. You understand? It's a consciousness that is right in here. So, your son comes in the house and he just fell down and scraped his leg and blood all over the place. He looks terrible, terrible, terrible. And you say to him, hi, what's going on here? He says, oh, I fell down on my bike. Well, how do you feel? Fine. Go in the bathroom, wash it off. Okay. So he goes in the bathroom, washes it off, mops it down, and then he goes out and plays. Or he comes in all bloody, Mama loses her gasket, you know, and she's just frightened as can be, and says, oh, my dear son, oh, bacteria, all this stuff. She names it, she claims it, she puts that stuff right in there. And it's not there. Every bacteria that exists in the universe is in you today, is in you right now. Every good thing that exists in the universe is in you right now. Because you are the allness right now. You are the allness. Because
we have had this before. Remember? What the science teaches? Where is all time and place? Right here, right now.
All time and all space are right here, right now. There is no otherness. There is no... You say, well what about when you go back to your campus? No, it's just one place. But you see, the game we also are playing is another part that is very important for us to think about. And this is what our stem cells cater to. I am... Number 12. Right.
What?
What? I am number 1. It looks like a 7.
Okay. You're going to say,
I am number one. Now, if you are number one, what about the rest of us? That's always disturbed us. If I'm number one, what about the rest of us? Where are we? Who do we think we are? Well,
all time and all space or place is right here. And wherever I am, the allness is there. When I am in Campbell, and I am in this church here, Campbell Clinton, I am here.
Like that. And when I'm here and I think of Campbell and the campus of the university, I'm there. No matter what I think, I am there. When I tell you the story about my son building his ultralight airplanes, I'm there. By the way, I have my college license too. And I can fly too. But you see, it's wonderful. We can do anything. It doesn't matter. I have a friend. She's 90 years old, 91 now. And she went in for her driver's license. They gave it to her for another 10 years. And what confidence they have in this woman. Another 10 years. Amazing lady. But why not? She went in there with the expectation that she would live to, and they didn't ask her to drive the car. They didn't ask her to take a vision test or anything else. They just gave it to her. They just wanted to see that she's alive. No. She has a little red Jeep. And one of her great joys is to go around and take sweet rolls to the shut-ins, to the elderly who cannot get out and about. She's 90 years old and she's driving around in her little red Jeep, and she comes to the stop sign. She knows what she's doing. She's on top of it. She's number one. She's number one. Amazing lady. This is up to you to be amazing too. When you learn to talk about more definite time and place, and when you learn how you can demonstrate that in your life right now, in all the things that you do. Now, perhaps we can have, how many number? What number do we have here today approximately? You don't have to do it. We're about 70 people here, maybe 100. But we could run off some of these joy songs for you so that we could sing them, and you could each have a copy. Is that possible? Yeah. So, and then we could also run off this sheet here on the metaphysicians if you wanted. But these are good stuff. Now, we have here also, this here is a clipping, Right Ideas for the Brains. And it tells about how the brains are being utilized in very special ways to accomplish great and wonderful things. And then here's another article, and this is the article that I read to you from Discovery Magazine about tricking the mind to make it believe that it can live forever. So, we have a number of other things here that you might glance through. I have only two copies along. This is the seminar, the 7-day intensive seminar, and it was the School of the Master. And then this is the Magic of Beginning Again, another 7-day seminar. And then we have a 3-month seminar. And I'm loud, aren't I? You want me to be a little more dominant. In these 7-day seminars, I give a meditation program, and we're going to be giving that on Tuesday, right? Yeah, I think so. And in this meditation program that we're going to do on Monday at 6 to 8 p.m. we're going to show you how to meditate. Meditate means to think about. We're going to show you what words to use to empower your thinking, and we're going to talk about introspection, how you listen within to the divine within, how you learn to have a conversation with God within you. Not like Warren's book on conversations with God. His is a little different approach. But this is how you do it yourself. And you have tapes of them from other seminars that I gave you. And they're very, very powerful, very nice. And when you hear how I do it, you'll say, oh, that's easy. Until you try it yourself. The reason I say that, because you have a background. And your background makes you think that God is out here. And that you need to pray and be very humble, and you should be very careful how you talk to God. Know Him and live Jesus. This is what we've been taught. I think we have a nice cool breeze going here, don't we? No one who sees God can live. These are things that we want to be aware of. We want to take into our inner understanding and get the benefit from it. Now, how are you going to get the benefit from it? By knowing. Now, I have traveled around the world quite extensively, and I have listened to the philosophies of many religions, the Mohammedans, the Buddhists, the Catholics. I'm not on there, right? Yeah. So we'll go here. And I'm not on there either. But I'll speak louder. Yeah. And so, you can hear me? I did. I'm using the podium mic, and it's dead too, isn't it? Yeah. I think the door probably said amen. But
when I talk to these various religious groups, I find one wonderful experience in each religious group that I have the privilege of speaking to. They are all fundamentally the same. They are all fundamentally the same.
They are all fundamentally the same. Thank you.
All these religious groups are fundamentally the same.
And the reason that they're fundamentally the same is because there is only one foundation.
What is that foundation? Being yourself and having God.
What do you think Moses thought about being yourself and having God? He did this thing. He thought of whatever he thought was right. What do you think the prophets of old did what they thought was right? What do you think Muhammad did? What did he do? What did he do? He listened to them. He went in the cave and he listened to them. And he wrote what he got. And what he got was a parallel of the Christian Bible. And he's teaching those things. But you see, many of the Muhammadan people have chosen to go beyond the teachings of their leader. And in going beyond it, they lose the values that were basically there in the beginning. And what do the Indian tribes of the world teach? What do the tribes of the Asians and the people in the Polynesian Islands and all over the world, what are they teaching? They're all teaching the same thing, to believe in yourself, to know yourself. Now, many of them say there is a power that is greater than you are, and you must believe in that. And every time they do that, it means only one thing. They are saying, I want to control you. I want to control you. And that's why they're saying those things. They're saying, I want to control you. Anytime somebody tells you to believe in something other than yourself. Now, if your mother taught you values, does your mother need to worry about you? No. If we have been taught values by our parents, by our families, by our world, does the world need to worry about us?
You know, people laugh at a generation, I won't say my generation, people laugh at a generation because Leave It to Beaver and a few of these other lovely things were there, remember?
and leave it to Beaver. What did Beaver's dad do every time he came to see you?
What did he do? He wore a tie and a suit coat. My goodness, how strange in our culture today. A tie and a suit coat coming to dinner.
And the children always washed their hands before they came to the table without being told. And the children were always at the table punctually before it was time to eat. And the children always pulled the chair off for their mother or for their father. And the children were always courteous to each other at the table and elsewhere. The children always got along. You see, those are values that are not really taught so much today, but they're still really values of great, great meaning and great power for all of us. Are you willing to have those values in your life? Well, you do. Now, draw upon them. Draw upon those values. Give them power. Give them understanding. Give them purpose and direction in your life. And as you draw upon them and give them power, give them purpose, and give them direction, you will have miracles happening in your world. Now, the miracles are not unusual. The miracles are very ordinary and very special and very common, but they're miracles nonetheless. A miracle is something that we don't do all the time. It's a miracle your brother cleaned his room. You know? It's a miracle they all came to the table at the same time and I didn't have to holler. Mother says, Johnny, come in and eat, come in and eat, come in and eat. And Johnny knows he can come in on the third call or the fourth call. On the fifth call, he's in trouble. But he waits for the whatever he can get away with. And the mother says, Johnny, I call you once, you come to eat, you don't care if you don't eat. No problem. But then, when Johnny comes in, and Mama feels sorry for him because he didn't have something to eat, or Daddy feels sorry for him because he didn't have something, so gives him something, messes up the principle, messes up the training program tremendously. If I say you're a genius, I say it under all circumstances. I don't say it under just one. And if I say you're a genius, and I say that you are revealing all that knowledge right now, you're revealing all that wisdom that you are right now, you're revealing who and what you are. Are you ready to do that? Are you ready to do that? See, this is what I learned from the alchemists. This is what I learned from the alchemists. This is what, if you read any of King Arthur's stuff and sort of a casual, charming fiction, but if you read any of these things, everyone had to make a change in their attitude about themselves. They had to believe in themselves, not pay any attention to what was going on around them, not paying any attention to. Remember the story of King Arthur? And he knew the story of his sword? What did he do? According to the story, he was a lazy boy. And he didn't want to go all the way back to the area to pick up the sword that he was supposed to do. And he saw that one sticking in the stone. So he said, I'm going to take it out. And he put it up. And lo and behold, he became the King of England. But isn't it interesting? The simplicity of that is, it's not difficult. It's not difficult when we know who we are. Did that little boy believe he was very good? Did he believe he was something special? If he had not believed that he was something special, he could not have done it. If you do not believe you are something special, all of the possibilities in the world that stand right at your doorstep, right there waiting for you, cannot be yours. Now, after we have our lunch, we will come back and we will talk in the beginning about how to dig in to utilize our stem cells for the most positive, dynamic, forceful way, and how we can do it on a regular basis. And it's very easy. It's very easy. It has one statement that goes with it. Don't believe in appearances. If you believe in appearances, forget it. If you have the ability
not to believe in appearances, but to believe in the truth.
Do you believe that all time and place are here? If you do, then you have magic in you.
If you believe that you are revealing all that which is within you right now, you have magic in you. It works. I have taught
children, I know, blind and deaf laughter, for years. And these days, I'm through every course and every program. Funny, I was in New York, funny woman came up to me
just this past week, and she said, you know, I have my notes, and she opened her notebook there of all the things she had in her previous meetings, and in doing that, she said, look, I know God knows the answer. She said, I went in and I took my test for upgrading my teacher's stuff, and when I did that, it was perfect, and I passed 100%. And John tells me that if I don't allow you to eat, you won't have an ounce of energy left. So, see you later, and I love you, and I love you, and I love
you. Delicious chicken and roti, or fish and curry, for $200 a serving, soup for our bread, and fall for our bread. Now she do the drink, and you get the music from that artist who's at the door right at the
next. You will deserve lunch in a moment.
What's that?
Yeah, we'll soon get you some lunch.
Oh yeah, thank you.
Yeah. Now, would you like chicken with roti or fish and bami?
Chicken is fine.
Chicken is fine, and some soup?
Some soup, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.